Welcome to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. My name is Michael Eriksson, and this is episode 6 of our beginner series. If you're new to this series or even to this podcast, then be sure to check out the earlier episodes that we've done on the beginner series. We've talked about how to select your first race, gear and equipment, training structure and principles, swimming, and now the turn has come to cycling for beginner triathletes. So today we'll cover skills and basic handling, how to build bike fitness, equipment specifically for the bike, and also finally some safety and practical considerations. But before we get into all of that, big thank you to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. They make carbohydrate products like gels, drink mixes, and chews, plus electrolyte products. Carbs is your main race fuel source, and your body only stores a limited amount of carbs. So using gels and drink mixes is a great way to top up your carbohydrate availability during races. And electrolytes, on the other hand, replace the salt that you lose in your sweat, and this can help you avoid cramps and keep your muscles firing. Especially on hot days, this can be important. And electrolytes help prevent hyponatremia, which can happen if you drink too much plain water and you basically dilute the sodium concentration in your blood. And in the more extreme cases, this can become quite a severe condition. Also, if you are planning on going to the Ironman Zone 3 World Championships in Marbella this year, Precision Fuel and Hydration are the title sponsor of this year's race, very excitingly, and you will have the PH1000 electrolytes available on course if you're racing. As a TTS listener, you can get 15% off your first order of any Precision Fuel and Hydration products with the code TTS2025 on precisionfuelandhydration.com. All right, so let's get into cycling for beginner triathletes. As a bit of an introduction, you probably know this, but the bike leg makes up the largest portion of pretty much all standard triathlon races, sprint distance, Olympic distance, half and full distance triathlons. The bike will typically be around about 50% of the total time of these standard distances. And this is one of the reasons why improving your bike fitness and your bike performance is such a valuable thing across any triathlon distance. But the other reason is that cycling also has a knock-on effect on your run. So if you start the run too fatigued from the bike leg, then even if you are a strong runner normally, you won't be able to use your running potential really. So improving your bike fitness can help you not only ride better, and riding being the largest part of the triathlon that is important, but also run better. There's also the fact that bike training is a great way to build general aerobic fitness that can transfer really well to running, even to swimming, to a lesser degree than running for sure, but to some degree, yes. And yeah, the risk of overuse injuries on the bike is very low, at least compared to running. So it's much safer from an injury perspective to build a great aerobic base by using the bike compared to using the run. So this is another reason that bike training ends up being very utilized among triathletes and a really important tool that you have to improve your triathlon performance and your aerobic fitness in general. In addition to the fitness aspect, though, when you do spend a lot of time on the bike, which you end up doing in the race and in training typically, it is important to build bike handling skills and to become a safe and aware cyclist in terms of being able to handle riding in traffic and riding among cyclists, drivers, etc., to avoid accidents, to avoid crashes. And many of these skills also overlap with skills that actually help you ride faster on race day. So there is definitely a skill and a bike handling aspect that is also important to consider. So we'll cover both of that. We'll cover bike handling and skills, and we'll cover fitness in this episode, as well as some other bits and pieces. Let's start with the skills and bike handling pieces in a bit more detail. So these are things that you can and should practice deliberately. To some extent, there are also parts of this that just happens organically. Some of the skills that we'll discuss here are relevant even in your very first event, and others become more relevant as you get more into triathlon. But the things that I think are important from the very start is, first of all, drinking from your water bottle while you're riding without having to stop and even get off the bike. This is something that some beginners do struggle with and maybe not even think about that that's a thing, but depending on how how long your first race is. Is it going to be a sprint distance or maybe even an Olympic distance? That is becoming an important thing to do, to drink, to hydrate. And on also depending on the weather conditions, of course, the hotter it is, the more important it becomes. So this is an important skill to practice. And similarly, consuming some energy. So having a gel, having a bar while riding, that can be very important. If you're doing a sprint distance race and you're finishing it in, let's say, an hour and a half roughly, then you don't necessarily need to consume any energy, or at least not on the bike. But let's say it's an Olympic distance race, you'll probably be out there for a minimum of 2 hours, but it could be up to 4 hours depending on your speed. So then consuming some energy is important. And of course, you can stop and consume something, but you'll gain a lot of time and momentum from doing it while you're riding. And it's not, at the end of the day, that difficult. It's a skill that can be learned quite easily. So these are skills: drinking while riding, consuming energy while riding, skills that are great to learn even before your first race. To a degree, depends on how first you or how long you will be out there in your race, at least when it comes to the energy consumption part. Then the other thing that is also quite important is to be comfortable riding in the proximity of other cyclists, since in the race, there might be a lot of other people around you. It depends on the size of the race, of course, but being comfortable and not getting nervous if you have other cyclists around you or passing you, that's an important skill. So definitely worth practicing a little bit before your first event that you're doing. Then as you progress from simply completing your first event to trying to get more into triathlon, trying to improve your performance, and especially as you upgrade to, if you do your first triathlons on something like a commuter bike, and then you upgrade to a road or even a triathlon bike, then there are some additional skills that start to become important and more relevant. And these are, for example, clipping in and out of your pedals when using so-called clipless pedals, where you're locked into the pedals. That's probably the first and most important one to learn, and something that takes a little bit of deliberate practice to do, but it's very simple. It's like learning to ride a bike. Once you know how to do it, then you're set. So it's just take a couple of training opportunities to work on that, and you'll be totally fine and know how to do it. It becomes second nature very quickly. Then there are additional skills and factors that are more, let's say, organic. They happen over time, the more you ride. So these are things like cornering well, cornering safely, using your brakes well, descending well with control, but also not losing too much unnecessary speed, riding well in different weather conditions. So especially riding well when the roads are wet, when you have lots of wind. Those are things that you can practice and that you learn and get better at the more you ride in those conditions. Then you have understanding how to ride different terrain, different course profiles efficiently, so that even if you don't get stronger per se, even if you push the same amount of power, you can go faster on a certain course or on a certain type of terrain. That's another thing that you learn over time. But also you can use some deliberate practice sessions and work on that consciously to improve. And riding at different cadences. So for example, when you go downhill, the speed is high, you might be in your highest gear already, and to be able to push power into the pedals at that speed, you need to be able to pedal at higher cadences. And the opposite goes for when you're climbing and the speeds are slow and you might already be in your lowest, your easiest gear, but you will still need to be able to push power at a lower cadence and be able to do that and not then accumulate too much fatigue. So riding at different cadences, another thing that is worth practicing and that you will practice organically, but some specific practice also helps with. Even using different cadences as a tool to manage fatigue, especially in longer races, this can become quite useful. You might start to feel fatigue over the course of the bike leg, but then switch to a different cadence and actually find that gives you a bit of a second wind almost, and you're not feeling as fatigued once you've changed cadence, upped it or down or lowered it a bit. And there are different ways to practice all of these skills. You of course want to try to do it in a safe way. Try to find a good, safe and controlled environment where you can practice easily and without having any risks of accidents. So for example, when it comes to learning how to eat and hydrate on the bike, and also learning how to clip in and out of pedals, if you have a very quiet residential street or a quiet bike path or even an empty parking lot, those would be great places to do that. Riding in the proximity of others is something that you actually have to practice riding with others to really practice that. But the thing that you can think about there is to start with maybe one other cyclist, maybe a cyclist or triathlete friend, ask them to help you out. And then try to move up to riding in a very small group, two or three other people. And eventually you might even go for some regular group rides with slightly bigger groups of 8 to 10 people or so, all riding together. Skills like cornering and descending can be practiced, or a lot of that happens through organic practice, through just riding, all of the training that you do. But you can also do specific training for that. You can put out cones in a parking lot or on an empty street, practice cornering, and you can do repeated descents of a local hill to practice descending. I would say that most people getting into cycling or triathlon will primarily learn most of these skills very organically, and that all generally works perfectly fine. In my years of coaching, what I have seen a fair few people struggling with is really one or two particular skills on this list. So I think the takeaway for you, if you're getting into triathlon, is to go through the list of skills that I just listed. And if there's something that is an obvious challenge for you, for example, a common one, is drinking, grabbing your bottle from your bottle cage while you're on the bike and then drinking while continuing to ride. If that is something that you struggle with, then take that skill or whatever skill it is that you feel that you're not quite managing, work on that consciously, do some targeted practice around that skill. And most of these things are things that you can learn relatively easily. But you just need to take the time to do a couple of sessions where you really focus on just that particular skill. Now, moving on to building bike fitness. If you listen to episode 3 of this beginner series, you'll remember some of the key principles of training that we discussed there. One of them that is really important is to focus on consistency over perfection. A second one, equally important, is that most training should be easy, and some training should be hard. And finally, equally important as the other two, is the simple formula of stimulus plus recovery equals adaptation. So to get fitter, you need a stimulus, which is a training, but you also need recovery, and that's what leads to adaptation. So just training doesn't lead to getting better, and obviously just recovering also doesn't lead to getting better. You need both, and they need to be in appropriate quantities. These principles apply when building bike fitness, and the bike is generally a very physical discipline compared to swimming, for example, where you have a more of a really high technical and skill-based component, whereas the bike is super physiological. Metabolic fitness is a big part of it. So that means that the training principles apply maybe even more on the bike than it would in something like swimming. So keep these training principles as a foundation for everything you do, because that is really important. The great advantage, as I alluded to a bit earlier in this episode, is that with the bike, you can build a lot of aerobic endurance with very low injury risk, at least from an overuse perspective, because the bike is not weight-bearing like running, so it's quite safe to add training volume on the bike. And this means that it's a super powerful tool for improving your general aerobic fitness. And there is some great crossover effects to running in particular, to a lesser extent to swimming. This crossover effect is, I would say, stronger the farther you are from your genetic potential. So when you're a beginner, you're very far from your genetic potential and you get a big crossover effect from cycling to running. When you're somebody, on the other hand, that has maybe done triathlon for 20 years, you've trained well, you've trained a lot, you've been coached, so it's been like good training, good quality training, then probably you're not getting a lot of additional crossover effects at this point anymore, because you're relatively close to your genetic potential. So specificity becomes more important. To run better, you need to run. To bike better, you need to bike, and so on. But again, for beginners, you get a huge crossover effect from cycling to the other sports, and that can be an advantage. When it comes to building bike fitness then, and by extension, crossing over just general aerobic fitness, you can think about three levers to provide your training stimulus, which are frequency of training, duration of training, and intensity of training. And for beginners, this is usually the sequence or the order that you should start to pull the levers. So starting by frequency, getting out on the bike multiple times per week. Next, starting to increase the duration of at least one of your rides to create a weekly long or longer ride. And after this, after you have that in place, you start pulling the intensity lever. Now, in practice, if you already have some endurance sports background, maybe you come to triathlon from running or from swimming or from even from something like a team sport, so not endurance sports, but you're used to training, team sports or CrossFit, things like that, then it's not as if you have to follow this strict one first frequency, then duration, then intensity. You can kind of do this all in parallel, but still, I think that it's important to keep this prioritization of the different levers in mind, that intensity is less important than duration at this point, and duration is maybe less important than frequency at this point. Total duration is the most important, perhaps, but the duration of any one ride is maybe not as important as the frequency of riding. Either way, the point isn't that you have to do first one, then the other, but if you are completely new to endurance sports, I think that actually does make sense. You can just start by riding or doing all of your riding at a comfortable effort, and you don't have to do any intensity. Build up your weekly routine, build up your frequency, and then the duration of a longer weekly ride, and then think about adding intensity. If you have some more background in some kind of training, so you're used to some level of intensity, whether it's from running training or from football practice or CrossFit, then yeah, you are probably able to do one intense bike session per week already from the start, but without making that a focus that is more important than just building the frequency and the duration of riding, if that makes sense. Now, having said that the bulk of your training should be easy, some of your training should be hard, and you don't, when you start out, if you're brand new, you don't even have to do any intense training. How it becomes important to know how to do the easy training, the endurance training. And fortunately, it's quite straightforward. You just need to ride at a comfortable effort that it feels like you could sustain for a long time, significantly longer than the duration of your ride. You should be able to hold a conversation with somebody. If you're out riding with a friend, you could even try talking to yourself to see that this is actually possible if you're out on your own. And on a scale from 1 to 10, in terms of your rating of perceived exertion, this should feel probably like a 3 or a 4. You don't need to worry about power or heart rate or anything. If you do happen to have a heart rate monitor and you know your maximum heart rate on the bike specifically, keep in mind this is not the maximum heart rate that you have achieved running or anything like that, but the maximum heart rate you can achieve cycling. So for example, the maximum heart rate you see in a 20-minute FTP test, if you have done that ever, you can take 65 to 75% of your maximum heart rate on the bike as a guideline for where your heart rate should be in when you're doing endurance riding. But again, that's for most beginners, you don't need to do this. Just focus on riding comfortably, feeling good, feeling like 3 to 4 out of 10 effort, and that's good enough. No need to make things more complicated than that. For the intensity that you're doing, you also don't need complicated workouts. You don't need a lot of different workouts. You can get very far, I would say, on just two simple types of hard sessions, which are threshold intervals and VO2 max intervals. So an example of a threshold interval session would be 8 times 4 minutes at an RPE, rating of perceived exertion, of 6 to 7, with 2 minutes easy riding between these intervals. So basically you're trying to get about 30 minutes of total work, and the feeling should be comfortably uncomfortable or hard but sustainable. But really, the mistake that a lot of people do with this type of workout is that they're actually going too hard. They're going at the maximum effort that they can for 8 by 4 minutes, but it really should be sustainable, hard but sustainable, comfortably uncomfortable. Using those cues should help you get the right level if you stay honest with yourself of how hard you're actually working. The second type of session, that is VO2 max intervals. So an example here would be 8 times 2 minutes with, again, 2 minutes easy recovery. So in the threshold session, you had a 2-to-1 work-to-rest ratio, and in the VO2 max session, you had a 1-to-1 work-to-rest ratio. The RPE for the VO2 max intervals would be 8, 8.5 or so, maybe rising to a 9 towards the end of the workout. And the total work duration here would be about 15 minutes of very hard work. So here, this is a harder, higher intensity than threshold intervals. The feeling should be that, yes, you are working very hard, but you should still, it should still be controlled in the sense that you can maintain the same effort throughout each interval. You don't start very hard in the first 30 seconds and then just progressively die throughout that interval. And similarly, from interval eight should be a similar effort, similar intensity as interval one, not just in terms of how hard it feels, but how hard you're actually going. So if you're doing this as hill reps, for example, you should get to the same point on the hill in interval eight as you got on interval one. And doing hill reps is a great way for both of these intervals to really measure your effort, because you can see if you start from the same point each time, you can see how far you get. And basically both of these types of workouts, you want to stay quite consistent or very consistent and get to a similar point with each interval that you're doing. And yeah, the VO2 max session will be harder than the threshold session for sure, but you should still finish the session feeling that you could have done one or two more intervals if you had to. So it shouldn't be an all-out session. And basically, you can alternate these workouts and do one of them each week. And the rest of your riding, you just ride easy endurance comfortably, RPO 3-4. Try to make one of those weekly endurance rides a bit longer. And that is a very solid, simple structure for your bike training. There are some common mistakes to avoid when it comes to building bike fitness for beginners. And the first one I would say is doing your endurance rides too hard. So again, these rides should feel very comfortable, and you should finish the rides feeling that, okay, you feel good. You don't feel too tired. When you do the longer ride, yeah, you will start to feel some fatigue. That's okay. But you shouldn't feel like you're like really, really, you shouldn't feel like you're dying. You shouldn't feel like you're very tired necessarily. You should feel like you're tired, but in a good, controlled way. The second mistake to point out is doing too much intensity and neglecting volume. So most of your adaptations will come from volume, and then intensity is the icing on the cake, very important icing on the cake, but it doesn't replace volume. And some beginners make the mistake of turning that upside down, basically. So don't make that mistake. But on the flip side of that, you have a mistake of doing no intensity at all and just going out and riding. And then you do miss out on a lot of benefits that you get from intensity and that you do need to do intensity to get. So intensity is important. It shouldn't be underestimated. But again, it's all about the relative importance of that compared to all of the low intensity training that you're doing. And the next mistake, I mentioned the importance of pacing your sessions. And that is something that's super common for beginners especially, but also more experienced athletes, to start too hard within an interval workout like that and fade badly. It also happens in regular endurance riding. So you start a bit too hard and then you finish feeling too tired, or you finish way slower because you keep having to reduce your effort. So it's better to start really easy, and then if you feel good, build a little bit towards the end and finish with a bit of more steady riding. So start at an RPE of 3 and finish at an RPE of 4, and feeling that, yeah, you were actually pushing a little bit harder towards the end, but harder in a good way because you were able to push. So pacing, another common mistake. Learn to pace early and you'll reap the benefits throughout your triathlon career, basically. And then the final mistake that I want to point out is to do too much volume too soon. I did say how important volume is in cycling especially. So this mistake is maybe less common than the other ones, but it does happen. Volume is really important, but you still need to have a gradual progression of building that volume in order to actually benefit from it. Because remember, stimulus plus recovery equals adaptation. And if you give a too big stimulus when your body is not ready for it, then the amount of recovery that you would need to do is so great that basically you're not able to do it because it would require you to be a full-time athlete. And that's why, and in this way, you won't actually improve if you do too much volume too soon. And this is where you could get into issues such as overtraining or at least non-functional overreaching, that sort of thing. So yeah, don't do too much volume too soon. Take a progressive approach to it and build up over time. And yeah, on the fitness side, just to wrap up this section, remember that you don't need to overcomplicate things. Focus on consistency, ride often, build up a weekly long ride, and sprinkle in harder sessions regularly and execute those sessions well, but you don't need to do that too many of them because the bulk of your adaptations are going to come from the endurance riding. Right, let's discuss equipment. So this is a bit of a review because we covered equipment in detail back in episode 3. But since this is a bike-specific episode, cycling is a very equipment-heavy sport. I think it's worth it to have a review of that. And maybe there are some things that I'll remember to mention here that I didn't mention back in episode 3. So must-haves, and again, let's assume that you're a complete beginner to triathlon. You just need a bike that fits you and is in good working condition for your first event. You do not need to have a road bike. You definitely don't need to have a triathlon bike. You can do your first event or even your first several events on a commuter bike or any bike you have available, mountain bike, etc., to see first if you enjoy triathlon in general, if you enjoy the vibes, and then if you do, yeah, it will be a no-brainer to invest in a better bike. And I think that the first bike you should get then is a road bike, not a triathlon bike, because a road bike is more versatile and you can use it to great effect in triathlons. But yeah, you just need a bike that fits you and is in good working condition to get started. You don't need a road bike or a triathlon bike. You do need a helmet though. That's obviously mandatory. You also should have a basic repair kit, and this is something that you usually have a saddle bag, so a small bag under your saddle where you can carry spare tubes, tire levers, and a small pump or a CO2 inflator so that you can fix a flat tire if you happen to get a flat tire. And a water bottle and the water bottle cage on the bike is, yeah, I would say something that you should have for your first event. And finally, to stay comfortable, padded cycling shorts are really good to have. So you don't necessarily have to have it, but I would say that it's a simple enough, cheap enough thing to get, a very simple pair of them, and that will help quite a bit. And nice to have, so things that, you know, it's very nice to have it from an early point of your triathlon career, or even if you have them from the start, then all the better. But you don't need to go out and get them if it's not something that you have already. So, but they would include a road bike. So this would be, of course, faster, more efficient than riding on a commuter bike or another type of bike. And it also ends up being, eventually, once you really get into cycling, it ends up being more fun this way than to train on a commuter bike or another bike, if you're training on the road anyway. Next, you have clipless pedals and cycling shoes. So these are pedals that where you're actually, you're locking your shoes into the pedals and you can click in and click out, or lock yourself in and lock yourself out as you're riding. And this is done to have better power transfer and just a better cycling experience in general. It's really hard to explain until you've done it why it's better, but it just feels very fluent and smooth when your shoes are locked into the pedals. So this is something that when you get a road bike, that's probably that's the time to also start learn how to use this equipment. But if you don't have it now and you don't have a road bike, then no need to get that until the point where you feel that now is the time to have a road bike. A cycling jersey is nice to have as well, because there you have pockets on the back where you can carry some tools, some nutrition, and things like that. And a simple bike computer and a heart rate monitor can be very nice to have. A bike computer would show things like your distance, your time, your speed. And if you have a heart rate monitor, it would also show your heart rate in real time, which can be useful. So these can be great tools for your race and for training, at least if you're somebody who's very interested in doing structured training and knowing where you are in the race. If you're more, let's say, data minded, then having it from early on can be quite useful. You absolutely don't have to have these things early on. eventually, when if you get serious about training, yeah, they do become must-haves, but they're not must-haves from the start, but they can certainly be nice-to-haves. And then the final nice-to-have that I want to highlight is an indoor bike trainer, especially if you live somewhere with bad weather or in a big city with lots of traffic, so it's hard to get out and do good training on the roads. Then doing training on an indoor bike trainer where you can just put your own bike on it, well, this is if you have a road bike, or depending on your bike trainer, it could be a mountain bike or even a triathlon bike, of course. That can be a huge advantage because it allows you to train, it allows you to train with structure. And these days, this was not the case 20 years ago, but these days you can really set up a good, fun, motivating indoor cycling experience with things like the softwares that we have now with immersive virtual riding and so on. It's not the same as riding outside, but if you don't have great riding for whatever reason, big city, bad climate, etc., then you can do some fun riding indoors as well. So an indoor trainer can be a nice to have, especially in certain scenarios. There are a few things that I think are overkill for beginners and that you should wait a bit until you get. So that would be, first of all, a time trial bike. So you don't need to have that yet. Start with a road bike. I think every triathlete should have a road bike before they have a triathlon bike, probably. I know that not all people do. It's fine. But I just think that a road bike is so much more versatile. And so, yeah, I think it makes sense to wait with that. Wait until you know that you're really into triathlon and you have a road bike and you've been really into cycling as well, and you love the cycling aspect of triathlon training, and you start to want to really go faster, and that becomes your goal. It's when your goal is to start to go from just doing events, having fun in events, and it starts to be about chasing PBs, chasing positions, that's when it starts to make sense to have a time trial bike. But you don't need to rush the process of getting there. Race wheels, aero helmet, same thing there, or even more so. A day would come after you get a time trial bike, and when timing, speed really starts to matter, and you want to chase every single second, or at least every minute that you can, that's when you can start to care about those things. And then a power meter. This can be very useful, and I would be close to putting a power meter in the nice to haves. At least some power meters now that are actually getting quite affordable. I always tend to recommend, no affiliation or sponsorship, but the Favedo Asioma. You can get a single-sided Favedo Asioma, and that's a very good, affordable power meter of super high quality. And yeah, they can be useful. They can be nice to have, but I still think it's a bit overkill. I think a heart rate monitor is where you, and the bike computer showing the speed, those are the first two measures of intensity that you should start using when you're starting out and starting to use metrics to train with and race with. And then you add a power meter on top of those two a little bit later on. That's how I would approach things when it comes to using these sorts of, let's say, devices to train with. So the bottom line here, or the summary, is to start with what you have. Make sure that it's safe, it's functional, and gradually add items if you find yourself getting into triathlon, getting into cycling, and wanting to improve. So there are some things that you start adding just because, you know, because of the enjoyment, because it being fun, like going from a commuter bike to a road bike, cycling jersey, all of that, those sorts of things are just make the overall experience nicer. And then things like a time trial bike, race wheels, aero helmet, those are things that you add when you start chasing times, chasing, like optimizing your speed or in race situations. Let's discuss some safety and practical considerations here as the final big section of this podcast. There are a few key things that you need to consider here. Obviously, when you're out riding on the road, obey traffic laws. Ride predictably, so don't do sudden swerves or unpredictable movements, because that can get you in trouble when you have traffic around you. Make yourself visible with lights, put bike lights on. There are some really good ones now. And wear brightly colored clothing. It's so much easier for drivers to see you, especially if they're a bit distracted, if you're wearing something bright and colorful compared to some black nondescript kit. And while you should ride predictably and don't do anything unpredictable, you should expect others to not do the same. Expect the unexpected, expect people to, especially drivers, because drivers is the biggest danger to you on the road. Expect that they might do something unexpected, something that is not rational, and ride defensively. Don't put yourself into dangerous situations. This is really important, obviously, because you want to be safe out on the road. And there are, yeah, accidents happen daily. You need to do the best that you can to avoid them and minimize the risk. We can never completely eliminate risk, but we can try to minimize the risk. And if you want to dive deeper into this topic, I did an episode with Rachel Maney, who is a director of a company called Bike Law that deals specifically with bike crashes or involving drivers and bikes, or drivers and cyclists. This was episode 436 of the podcast, so I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But that conversation has a lot of detailed information on how to stay safe out on the roads. And then moving on from safety a little bit, although it's related, learning some basic maintenance is really important. So first of all, keeping your tires properly inflated. I can't say what pressure you should put into your tires, because this will depend on the width of the tire, or a bit on your weight and things like that. But there will be a maximum tire pressure indicated on the tire itself. But keep in mind, this is really a maximum, and the ideal pressure is usually well below this maximum pressure indicated. The best way to know what pressure to put in is to use an online calculator. There are lots of them out there. The Silka online calculator is quite good, although it's very much optimized for performance, so which might be a bit different than what you want to do as a beginner. As a beginner, you might hear even slightly lower in terms of tire pressure. Either way, use online calculators to get a relatively precise target, and use a pump with a pressure gauge. And this is the best way to put the right pressure in your tire. But if this all sounds a bit too much for you, like you don't want to bother about finding the right tire pressure on a calculator and using a pump with a pressure gauge to inflate it, just do a simple thumb test. So press your thumb into the tire, and the tire should budge a little bit, but it shouldn't budge much. If you can make it budge quite a lot, then you should inflate the tire more. If it doesn't budge at all, you can't even slightly budge it, then it's probably overinflated. So that's a simple test you can do to get it very roughly in the ballpark of at least not being dangerously low or dangerously high. In terms of cleaning and maintenance, clean your bike regularly, and especially keep your chain and drivetrain clean and lubricated. The best thing that you can do probably is to go to your local bike shop, get some recommendations for a couple of products that you can use for this purpose, and they can also then give you a simple cleaning and maintenance routine. But without going into too much detail, generally, to clean the frame of the bike, you can just wipe it down with a damp cloth fairly regularly, even though there are specific products that can do an even better job than just a damp cloth. For the chain and the drivetrain, your cleaning routine should involve first applying a degreaser, really kind of getting in there with some brushes and stuff or a chain cleaning device, and get the degreaser on there, then let the chain dry, and reapply a lubricant. Don't lubricate this is a common mistake, I think, for beginners especially, to lubricate excessively, and that will just attract dust and dirt that will kind of start to sit on the drivetrain and make it just wear out prematurely. So don't lubricate excessively. If you happen to get a bit too much on there, you can wipe off any excess from the chain. And the final point here with maintenance and practical considerations is to always carry a repair kit and know how to use it, of course. So being able to fix a flat tire on the roadside is pretty much a rite of passage for every cyclist. And it's something that I recommend practicing at home, because if you have your first puncture when you're out on the road, especially if you're a bit farther away from home, that can be quite stressful. So it's best to practice this at home in your garage or somewhere. And then you have the confidence that you have all the tools with you when you're out riding. And if you get a flat tire, you will be able to fix it. So we're getting towards the end of this episode. I'll just give a quick summary. First of all, remember, cycling is the longest part of a triathlon, and it's not independent of the rest of the event. Your bike leg also affects your run leg significantly. Safety in both training and in racing is crucial, so learning good basic bike handling skills and having your gear and equipment in order and well-maintained is very important, as is learning how to share the road with both other cyclists and with drivers. So yeah, learning how to ride well in traffic, well and safely in traffic. On the equipment side, you don't need a lot to get started. Just use what you have and then add items gradually as you get more and more invested. First, for the fun and for the better experience. And then secondly, to get faster and faster and try to get more of those marginal gains, if you want to put it that way. But don't feel that you have to have a lot of gear from the start. You can get by with a fairly minimalistic set of gear as you get started. On the bike handling side, the two things that I see beginners needing to practice the most in the early days are, one, drinking and maybe eating while riding, and two, clipping in and out of pedals. So this is at the point when you are using clipless pedals. And a lot of other skills will develop organically the more you ride. So things like cornering, braking, there are definitely things that you can and should do specifically for that, but maybe less important than those two aforementioned factors. On the fitness side, volume is a main driver of fitness improvements in cycling, but as with anything in training, you need to progress gradually from where you are to where you want to go. So start by riding more frequently, then start adding duration, and then add intensity. You can do this in parallel if you have some sports or athletic background, especially if it's in endurance sports, but also team sports, CrossFit, etc. But in general, if you keep most of your riding easy and then use well-structured interval workouts to add an appropriate amount of intensity to the mix, then you can't go much wrong. One more thing that I actually didn't mention yet, but I think is really important, is to learn to love riding your bike. And this is different for different people. For some people, it means getting out in the country lanes. For others, it's getting really into the equipment side of things, getting really nerdy and geeky about that. And for yet others, it might be the community aspect of cycling, going out and riding with mates and so on. So there's different things that make different people love cycling. But if you learn to love riding your bike, then it will make it so much easier to ride often, ride for longer, and reap the benefits of that for your bike fitness and then also for your run and triathlon benefits. And especially if you later on end up training for longer triathlon distances like 7.3s or Ironmans, then having developed this love for cycling will just make that kind of training a lot more enjoyable and you'll get more out of it. So that's it for this beginner series episode. You can find detailed show notes on scientifictriathlon.com/beginner6. That's the number 6. If you have questions about this episode or questions for future beginner series episodes, please send them to me on email, michael@scientifictriathlon.com. That's the best way to reach me. You can also DM me on Instagram @scientifictriathlonhq. I'm not as good at answering DMs, but it is possible to reach me there as well. Just expect a bit longer response times. In the next episode of this beginner series, we'll talk about obviously running and run training, but we'll probably have at least one non-beginner series episode coming out before that, which is an interview with running coach John Davis from Running Ridings. And the topic of conversation there will be marathon training. So actually a lot of people are, this time of year, are getting into some marathon training for late fall or early spring marathons. So that's quite topical, I think. And there'll be a really good chat with John about all things marathon training. So stay tuned for that and stay tuned for the next beginner series episode. If you have been enjoying this series and you want to help out, you want to show your appreciation in some way, then the best thing that you can do is to share it with a friend. Share this series on social media or in your local tri club. And also, if you can, please rate and review the podcast in Apple Podcasts or on Spotify or wherever you listen, because these things all really help a lot. So it means a lot if you can do this. And if you're interested in getting some professional help with your training, racing, and overall fitness and performance, then check out our training plans and coaching services on scientifictriathlon.com. If you're interested in coaching, we have a team of 6 really great coaches to choose from with different strengths and characteristics. So there's pretty much a guarantee that at least one of our coaches will be a great fit for you. And I also want to mention that if you don't know how to structure your training during the off-season, then check out my new base training plans, which would be a great budget-friendly option if you can't afford coaching. And I also have a low volume version of the base training plans that would be really beneficial for beginners that are just getting into triathlon. So check that out. You can find out more on scientifictriathlon.com/plans and scientifictriathlon.com/coaching for more information. Finally, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. If you're looking for high quality, practical and tasty fueling and hydration products, make sure to try Precision Fuel and Hydration, and don't forget to take 15% off your first order with the code TTS2025. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.